flying at night. It increases the risks, but what are the opportunities? I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. We're here to talk about safety issues, as we often do on Mondays. And Bob, we appreciate your joining. Thanks very much.
My pleasure, as always, Paul.
You have an article headed, "Dark is Here, Know the Risks." Why is this not intuitive? What risks are there in flying at night that don't apparently occur to people?
Well, first of all, I certainly don't want to discourage night flying. It is one of the most breathtaking, exciting times to fly. The air tends to be a lot smoother. There's less traffic, less chatter on the radio, and it can be a very, very rewarding experience. But as I say this, I'm visualizing in my mind's eye stars shining bright, a moon casting, its glimmer over the terrain below. But just imagine what it might be like if we find ourselves in a condition where there is no moon. It's a dark night and high overcast skies that are obscuring any starlight or moonlight. And then also visualize being out over open water or in places like where you're from, originally out in the Oregon area, where you go just east of Portland and you're in the wilderness and there's just no lights above and no lights below.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, we're in VFR conditions, but we have to operate solely by reference to the instruments. Now, picture a VFR-only pilot in a condition like that, and in the article that I cited, I cited the experience of a Beach B-35 pilot with passengers, got into this situation. He lacked an instrument rating and suddenly found himself, without any kind of a visible horizon. Well, tragically, the airplane landed or ended in tragedy, and it's something that we all need to think about.
You know, I think I've related this story. It may have been a while, but when I was flying in Oregon, and by the way, Bob, I am originally from Buffalo.
I knew that as I said that. Thanks.
I was flying. It was one of my early cross-country flights at night after I got my license, my certificate, and I took off from an airport probably 50 miles inland to fly to Newport on the coast, and I had to cross the Coast Range to do so. And I intentionally left myself a lot of margin for error and altitude. I flew at a fairly, eight, 9,000 feet over the Coast Range. And that was going to require that in order to make a graceful, stable approach into the Newport Airport, I would be flying out past the coastline and turning out over the ocean to come back toward the coast to land at this airport. And I got to tell you, as prepared as I thought I was to see this scene, once I got the lights of the land behind me and was starting into my turn, there were a few stars visible, but there were also a few boats out there, and it very quickly became a total toss-up. What was the sky and what was the ocean? And, fortunately I wasn't too far out there or on my own for very long that way, but I could see right away that sensation, and I found myself, starting into a tighter spin, a tighter turn than I had intended to make back toward the coast, and had to catch myself and say, wow, I'm glad I experienced that when I knew I'd be seeing the lights of the coast again in 10 seconds. I can only imagine what happens to these guys who get out, especially with passengers, and maybe encounter this for the first time.
Well, it does, and it happens, unfortunately, all too frequently. We've read many NTSB reports of individuals taking off out of Florida, coastal cities and towns and communities in Florida, and they get out over the Gulf or out over the Atlantic in a scenario that you've just described. All this points to the need for the flight training community to get our students out at night. Let's get them out over open water or featureless terrain and let the student experience himself or herself the conditions that you've experienced and then as a minimum, impart the ability to make a 180-degree turn using the attitude indicator as a reference for our bank, using our heading indicator as also a reference for bank in terms of the speed at which the heading indicator is turning, looking at the turn coordinator, but be able to, once we've left night references to the ground, such as Lights of the City, as we proceed into the wilderness areas. My goodness, if we can just execute that 180-degree turn back, we'll find ourselves back where we can see up from down.
Well, Bob, everybody who's going for the private pilot certificate, and I realize that not everybody is these days, but if you're going for the private certificate, one of the requirements is that you make a night cross-country flight with your instructor. Is this maybe an opportunity that's being missed in a lot of flight training environments?
Well, yeah, I think to do the night cross-country in the conditions that we're talking about, that is a missed experience or a missed opportunity. If we just simply use that night cross-country as a means from getting from one airport to another to satisfy the 100-mile requirement without taking the student out over, you know, featureless terrain on a dark night, then we are missing an opportunity. You know, and I don't want to close this discussion without, again, coming back and emphasizing, we know the high cost of training, but in today's sophisticated environment, having instrument training, having the ability to interpret our instruments and having the skills to keep our airplane upright solely by reference to the instruments is something, if we're going to be doing any kind of night flying or long-distance cross-country flying, I think it goes without saying that we really need to secure this additional rating on our certificate just from a safety perspective.
Well, as you know, Bob, at least one major manufacturer with whom you're intimately familiar is putting this into its curriculum.
Yes. I mean, we're seeing integrated curriculums now, and we're trying to do more and more of this at our flight school. In other words, take a brand new student and take them right from private through the instrument curriculum while integrating them at the same time. So they will take a never-ever first-time private pilot and put that individual under the hood or into actual IMC conditions just so that they can see right from the beginning what it is that we're dealing with. So I think a change in the curriculum is coming. I think by integrating this earlier and earlier into the training, not unlike in public education or in elementary education, the benefits gained by introducing foreign languages younger and younger in the second, third grades, for example, rather than waiting until high school years to do this. I think the same primacy of learning principles exists. This is something that I think is going to really improve safety as we do this, and it'll get more people into the instrument curriculum and completion of that rating.
We're talking with Bob Miller, who is a CFI in the Buffalo, New York area. He also publishes Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot, which you can find at overtheairwaves.com. We'll be back to talk more in a moment about darkness and the opportunities maybe that it presents. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. We're talking about darkness, and we've talked about the challenges it presents, especially for someone without an instrument rating. Bob, I know that at your flight school, you prefer never to use foggles or a hood, and fortunately, you happen to live in a part of the country which often cooperates in providing real IMC for students in which to practice. However, nighttime, especially when it comes earlier in the wintertime for most of the Northern Hemisphere, may present an opportunity for those flight schools in the Southeast or in Arizona or New Mexico to have a little IFR-like experience even on a VFR night.
Well, there's no question. Certainly, you could, you know, where you may not be able to find IMC conditions in the daytime hours in Tucson, Arizona, you certainly can find them at nighttime. You just you wait for a moonless night. Now, we'll have stars, and some of the most brilliant star, you know, studded skies exist in the Southwest. I know that, but there are times when we can catch some high overcast clouds and go out over the desert at night. We don't even need to have a foggle or a view limiting device on, and allow the student to experience in the nighttime environment what IMC or flying solely by reference to instruments can be. It'd be far more realistic than putting them into a view limiting device, and from an operational standpoint, far more effective, I believe, than putting them in a simulator.
Well, now, with very few exceptions in the regulations, any flight instructor certificate holder has to have already been an instrument rated pilot. Let me ask you about the situation in somebody going for their private certificate. If you can find an overcast, moonless night and go out over some unpopulated area like the desert where there aren't going to be any man-made lights below, does this count as, could you call this simulated instrument training?
You could call it real instrument training. As long as we don't have a visual on the horizon and that we're functioning solely by reference to the instruments, that's not simulated. It can be VFR conditions as reported in the weather. In other words, there's no cloud or visual obscuring conditions, but we simply do not have a visual reference to the horizon. That indeed is actual instrument conditions. The operative term is flying solely by reference to the instruments. And when that's necessary, that counts as actual conditions.
Well, then I guess I would have to wonder why more people don't take advantage of that. Do you think instructors are maybe have some reservations about the risks involved in getting out and doing this?
Well, yes. I think you hit a nail on the head. I think we have a great number of instructors who are very confident flying in VFR conditions and have rusty, rudimentary instrument skills themselves and may not be comfortable in that environment. That's a problem with some of the students who are instructors who are trained in simulated instrument conditions. They themselves are not comfortable out there in IFR conditions. And I don't know what we can do about that other than caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. And pilots that are looking to have quality instruction, they've got to find instructors in flight schools that really do introduce them to actual instrument conditions.
Well, we would encourage our listeners to do that. And Bob, I take this very much to heart because I am one of those people who I am thrilled to fly at night. Whenever I get a chance to fly at night, I love to, especially for all the reasons you mentioned in over the airwaves. You know, the traffic is down, the plane runs cooler, the radio is quieter, everything else. But also just from the standpoint that one of my bigger challenges in learning to fly was in navigation. And I've talked about this flight from, well, it was Lenhart Air Park in Hubbard, Oregon, out to the coast at Newport. Once I got to cruising altitude, I mean, just a couple miles from the airport where I took off, I could see the beacon at Newport. And in other cases, you look out and, you know, your destination 30 or 40 miles away already starts to look exactly like the yellow splotch on the sectional chart. And so from that standpoint, I love flying at night. And you can see, you know, let's see, we have traffic 60 miles away, no factor. You know, I mean, I just love the visibility at night. But at the same time, these things are very sobering. And I guess we need to maybe think about seriously about being instrument rated before we do this on a regular basis.
Well yes, and we certainly should. But I think something called primacy of learning that all flight instructors are well aware of. I have very little, like you, I enjoy night flying, and perhaps like you, I took a great percentage or a significant percentage of my own primary training was done at night. I recall way back when starting primary training in November here in Buffalo, and man, I don't think I saw a daylight flight until it was time to schedule my solo cross country because it was all done after hours in the evening at night. So night flying to me was something that was second nature. I don't particularly enjoy flying out over open water, but I have friends who say, no, golly, I learned to fly over open water, and I have no difficulty with that, but I'm not comfortable at night. This all speaks to the importance of providing primary students with an exposure to all flight conditions so that they do not develop a predisposition against either night flying or over water flying or instrument flying. This is something that once we've been trained and we can see how it works, then we can enjoy the full benefits of our skills.
All right, Bob, as always, we appreciate your input and these thought-provoking Monday conversations, and we'll look forward to another one in a week.
Thanks, Bob. Talk to you soon.
You can find out more about Bob Miller and read Over the Airwaves at overtheairwaves.com. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plagg. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.